Welcome back to ReadAboutIt.com, everybody. Reed Kerr here with you. Thanks for tuning back in here for another one of our Inside the Writer's Studio interviews. Today, a buddy of mine, Travis Irwin. He's one of those internet buddies. Travis and I think we crossed paths on an agent's website or something several years ago. And I feel like Travis is a friend of mine, even though I've never actually gotten to shake his hand yet. He is also a Texas writer. He is a writer in Amarillo, which is out in the panhandle of Texas. I'm in East Texas, which is almost Louisiana, so we are in the same state, and we might as well be on the moon from each other. But there's still, when I read his work, there's a lot of the same influence that I see in my work and in the work of Joe Lansdale, who's from about an hour and a half away from here. Just kind of some of the situations, including his novel, The Feed Store Chronicles, which is about some of his hijinks, exploits, that sort of stuff growing up. I'll talk to him about that. Also about some of his other work. Travis writes a lot of different things. And he's about, one of those has got him a gig on television soon that he cannot really talk about. So it's actually funny hearing him talk about it without actually talking about it. But among the things I'll talk about with Travis today, the process that he's going through of finding the right agent.
You know, it's kind of like dating. It's kind of like when you're a teenager and you're looking for that first girl, that first score, you know, the first one. Anybody willing, you're okay, yeah, let's do it. But, you know, after a while, you kind of refine your taste, and you got to find the right one for you.
We'll talk about the craft of writing also with Travis, and Travis actually stands up for some people who are thought of as bad writers.
She's just a bad writer to them.
Yeah.
He obviously gave her intended audience exactly what they wanted.
And also, Travis will talk, since he's a step ahead of everybody, he's got the book on the shelves. His biggest advice for aspiring writers involves that.
The one thing that seemed really obvious is just write.
All right, today here on ReadAboutIt.com in the writer's studio with Travis Irwin. Started off the interview talking to Travis about his book, Feed Store Chronicles. And if people were telling him that the Feed Store Chronicles, the entire time, that should have been the book.
Yeah, pretty much. It kind of started with a writing workshop I went to out in Arizona. It was a week-long deal, working the day on our writing, and then there was a dozen writers there and a couple of editors and stuff. In the evenings, we would get some beers and sit around and just start BSing, telling stories. And at the end of the workshop, one of the editors said, you know, your writing's good, but he said, I don't know if you know, at the end of the night, when everybody's telling stories, everybody wants a story from you. He said, you're a better storyteller than you are a writer.
Hmm.
What you ought to do is start writing some stories more in your storytelling voice than in your writing voice. So that kind of got me to think. And he also told me to start a blog. So I started a blog pretty quickly, figured out it was hard to create fresh content on a regular basis. So I started telling some of stories, humorous stories from my life, and I started a series called The Feed Store Chronicles. And that's really when my blog took off and everything. And that's when everybody said, oh, you should make this a book. But I kind of had different ideas. I was writing a variety of different fiction, everything from romance to literary. So I chased that for 3 or 4 years till finally I kind of said, well, the hell with it. I'm going to try and write these stories up. And at that, when I first wrote The Feed Store Chronicles, a friend of mine that owns a small publishing company, she got made an offer for it, and I turned her down because I wanted to hit the big boys in New York, you know. And 2 or 3 years later, after a variety of rejections and landing an agent and then kind of parting ways with that agent, all the time this lady kept pretty much hounding me, you know, constantly sending me emails, calling, saying, where's that Feed Store book? What are you doing with it?
Mm-hmm.
So finally I signed a contract with her and released it back in November.
How's that been for you so far?
It's been well. You know, it's not setting the world on fire, but it's at various times ranked up really high on Amazon. And, it's selling steady. I'm not displeased. My publisher is thrilled.
Mm-hmm.
They're wanting me to do a second book, so they're probably more thrilled than I am, but I really didn't know what to expect. That's my first standalone book. You know, I've had some stuff in collections, but it's been fun. It's been interesting. just this last week, my publisher gave it away on Amazon Kindle for 3 days. And that's really, I've sold more Kindle copies since they gave it away than I was before. So I guess the theory you give it away to sell more copies actually works. I'm not sure I would have believed that a couple of weeks ago, but.
Well, when I saw you post that on Facebook that it was free free for the Amazon Prime folks on Kindle. When she said that they were going to do that, how'd you take that to start with before you realized that it was actually going to be good for future sales? Are you a little nervous about that to start with?
Well, I don't know if nervous. Skeptical is probably a better word. You know, I read, you know, Jay Conrath. You know who he is?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've read his blog, and he's mentioned that just giving it away, getting more readers, and getting people talking about it and whatnot, that's really the only thing that generates sales beyond your normal circle of Facebook friends and blog readers and such. So, you know, I'd heard those theories, and I'd seen his proof, but I'm not sure I quite believed it. And like I said, she put it out there, and at this point, you know, sales had started to slow, so I was certainly okay with experimenting. I really didn't think it would jumpstart anything, but it has. I'm probably selling on 3 or 4 times the amount of downloads as I was prior to that. So, and hopefully, you know, that'll continue to grow. Reviews have been real good on it, so as long as you can get people talking, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. When you look back on it, you say it came out in November. Overall, how do you feel about it? I mean, obviously, you know, that's some stories you've been telling for a while, and that's one of your creations and one of your babies out there. Now that it's been out for, you know, about 6 months, and you've had sales, and they went down, and then they've gone back up again, do you feel like you're kind of getting used to the whole publishing process?
I don't know if you never get used to it, because it's always changing. Every project is a little different in how it's promoted and who's handling it. But I feel like I know it. I feel like, you know, there was a time where I was, you know, just kind of wandering blindly, hoping for some luck. You know, it's like walking up to play poker or something. You're hoping initially somebody just deals you 4 aces. But at this point, I feel like I have enough knowledge and skills that I can play the cards and win out in the end. You know? So things have built over the years. You know, I guess I was trying in the beginning. I probably had too lofty of goals. I turned down a few opportunities because I wanted the big score. Now I've learned to be more patient about it all. It takes time, you know. You release a book like that, yeah, you get an immediate spike of sales from the people you know. Then once they've bought it, and they'll tell a few people, but it's kind of that lull in between. That's, you know, is it going to catch fire, or is it just going to smolder and burn out right here? And for a little while, I felt like that, but it's steadily been growing. You know, there's a couple, probably late December, I think I hit a number one bestseller list for Amazon Canada. And that's just because 4 or 5 Canadian bloggers all happened to talk about it in the same week.
Mm-hmm.
And you're probably only talking, I probably sold 75, maybe 100 copies in Canada, but I sold them in a short, condensed period, so that helped me up to the top of that Amazon category. So,
hey, you always put that on the resume, number one in Canada on this date, boom, you got it. You know?
Yeah, and especially because the New York agents and stuff I had approached, some of them liked it, but they all felt it was too regional, too Texas-based to have a national following, so I did. The only place I hit a number one was Canada. I enjoyed that. It's kind of like, well,
yeah,
I guess it was more than just a Texas book.
Now, you say they want another book from you. Is the next one going to be more more of these stories, more Feed Store Chronicle style stories, or are you moving on to something else? What's next for you?
I'm still not sure as far as going through that publishing company. I had several things in the works. They really wanted me to write a book about my experiences as a mall Santa. I spent 1 year as a mall Santa and then 2 years as a mall Easter Bunny.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And I started trying to write that, and it just wasn't coming together. I've kind of been toying with the idea of writing some hillbilly versions of fairy tales.
Mm-hmm.
So it'll be something with them. It will definitely be humor. That's what they're interested in. That's kind of their market, humor books. So I have some others. You know, I used to ref high school football, and I did that 5 or 6 years. I have a good collection of football, humorous football stories from that time.
I see.
So I haven't actually signed the contract with them, so.
Mm-hmm. I've done a lot of radio and been in a lot of booths and seen a lot of high school football games around here. Of course, you know, we're both Texans. We know what football is like around here. And I used to train play-by-play guys because one of the radio stations I worked at, we would do seven different games a week, actually, 2 live and then 5 tape delayed, and they'd pay like $25 a game. So every year I had to train 5 more play-by-play guys, you know, just people's dads, basically. And I would tell them, you know, write down the things that happened to you because they're either funny or they're terrifying, but in about a year, they're going to be hilarious to you, and you might not remember them. So I assume that as a referee down in the field, you have quite a few of those stories, too.
Oh, yeah, I have some great stories, you know. It was a blast. I loved the game. So, that would probably be the easiest book to write. I think my publisher, that's probably the one they're least interested in right now, just because, well, face it, a lot of football fans aren't notorious readers. So
yeah.
I think they're worried about it being too tight of a niche market. They don't think it'll have a broader appeal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that would come down to me. It's how you have to write it in a way that people who aren't big football fans would enjoy, but you also would have to get a way to get them to pick up the book in the first place. And I think that's where the publisher's a little worried about, that just non-football people wouldn't want to pick up a book like that.
Mm-hmm. Before we move on to the next thing, Travis, you know, you're talking to your publisher and the various ideas that you've got. Can you look back, you know, 5, 6, 8 years ago to when you were, this was all still just an idea in your head and you had the dreams and all that, and look forward to now and think, you know, I've got a publisher. I'm actually negotiating with people. I'm talking about what I'm creating.
I'd have to go back about 10, 11 years, actually, because I've been at it, you know, that long. I don't know. If I'm honest, 10 years ago, if I thought, okay, 10, 12 years from now, I'm going to be at this point, I would have been disappointed. At that time, I thought I would be writing full-time, you know, not working and writing in the evenings and stuff, so... But I was pretty naive, you know. I had no real idea of how the business worked. And, of course, that was before e-books took off, and it was before 9/11. I can remember I finished my first novel about a week before 9/11.
Mm.
So I had just sent query letters out to New York.
Oh, to New York, yeah.
Yeah, and everything in New York just ground to a halt with 9/11. So that was kind of, and it was probably 6 months before people even really got back to answering queries and stuff. And during that time, I learned quite a bit. And I don't know, you know, I've just, after going to writing conferences and workshops and things over the years, my perception slowly changed. Like I said, I kind of naively, egotistically thought, oh, I'll just write this book and it'll sell. And, you know, 2 or 3 books from now, I'll be on the New York Times bestseller list. And it just didn't work that way. And I'm over that. When I write something now, I have no thought of, oh, this is going to hit the New York Times. I'm just hoping somebody buys it and builds from there. You know, I'm looking to build a career instead of hitting the big score
right,
like I used to. So, and each year, you know, for the last 4 years, my writing income has doubled each year. So I can kind of see a point now where I'll be able to write and sustain myself. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't want to be, you know, in music terms, you don't want to be the one-hit wonder. You want to be the guy that cranks out an album every year and gets a little bit better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the goal for sure. So, mm-hmm. And I feel like I'm headed there. I can't say too much about it, but I applied to be on this reality TV show that mm-hmm. is writing-based. And I actually just this week had to sign a confidentiality clause. So that tells you things are working out well, but I can't say any more than that. So,
okay, well, when that comes along, definitely I want to talk to you again because that's another one of the things that I do on the side. You know, when you were just kind of asking for advice about this, I think I told you, you are a casting director's dream in that reality show. You are... You know, it should take no convincing whatsoever for them to make you a part of it. So I know you can't talk about it, but definitely good luck to you on it, and keep everybody posted Facebook wise and everything else on what's coming up, won't you?
I will. Thanks.
All right. Let me ask you a couple questions about just the whole writing process for you, because as you said, you know, your expectations have changed over the last 10 or 12 years. Start with the easy one here. When do you write? How long do you write? Is it a regular thing for you? Because, you know, you're like most of the rest of us, you've got a full-time job. Do you have time set aside? How do you schedule that?
The time I have set aside is every school night when I get my boys to bed at 9. My office is upstairs over their bedroom, so I get them in bed. I come and write at least an hour. You know, there are some nights where I write 4 hours. It just depends how it's going. But every night I come upstairs and either write or edit for at least an hour. Now, I steal time wherever I can also. I carry a notebook when I'm at work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I can sneak away, if the boss isn't looking, I'll write 2 or 3 paragraphs just by hand there. Weekends, you know, sometimes when there's not soccer games and lawns to mow and all of that, I might get 2 or 3 hours on a Saturday or Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say every week I spend 15 to 30 hours writing.
How many projects do you have going at a different time?
Oh, several. It's hard to say exactly how many. I'll only usually be actively working on one fiction project at a time. I do some freelance nonfiction stuff. I write for a football magazine called Top of Texas, which does high school profiles for about 3/4 of the state.
Mm-hmm.
I do that too, so I may be writing 2 or 3 different teams' profiles and working on my fiction or, you know, and then, of course, I blogs. I still try to blog a couple of times a week if I can, but that's down on the chain. It has to be where I'm pretty happy with what I've achieved on my other writing before I'll even sit down and write a blog post. So,
mm-hmm. When you write... how often do you rewrites? Do you write something all the way through and then go back? Do you do it day by day? Do you do it page by page? How do you approach getting it down and then taking another look at it?
Yeah, I'm a basis when solely on my fiction or at least creative nonfiction, like the Feed Store Chronicles. I will write, but before I've ever started the actual book, I will take every character that's going to be in the book above more than just a casual mention,
mm-hmm.
and write a little vignette, a snippet of some part of their life. And I'm talking, this is, you know, fictional characters, so I've created these people.
Right.
But I'll try to pick a moment in their life that had some emotion, whether it be anger, happiness, sadness, you know, infatuation, some sort of emotion. And it's not a complete story. I just kind of pick up in the middle. I try to include some sort of dialogue, and I'll write about a page for each person. If it's a point of view character, I'll do four or five of these with different emotions. Just because then I feel like when I start, I know the character. I consider myself a character writer much more than a plot writer. You know, every story's about the characters, and plots are secondary in my mind. So that's what I do when I start. And then I'll begin and write three or four, maybe five chapters if I'm lucky. And then I'll lose momentum, generally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So I will go back and edit myself back. And, you know, I'll read what I've written, edit as I go. And by the time I'm done with that, I'm usually ready to, I'll take off, sometimes do three or four more chapters before I lose that momentum, at which point I go all the way back to chapter one and edit back myself into the story.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I may only get a chapter before I lose momentum again. Sometimes I'll realize, man, that first chapter sucked. I'm scrapping it and starting with chapter two. And, you know, of course, you have to bring some things that you introduced in one over. But basically, I keep going all the way back to the beginning and editing, and I do that all the way through the process. So by the time I'm finished with the book, you know, those first chapters I've edited and looked at probably 50, 60 times at least. So they're pretty clean. They're pretty right on. So then I start working on my pitches to editors or agents or whoever I'm going to target. I get that done, and I start sending it out because, you know, it takes weeks, months. Hell, I've gotten a query back 18 months after I originally sent it. So while I'm waiting to hear, then I concentrate on the back half of the book, really tightening editing because it hadn't been looked at but maybe three or four times at that point.
So they always tell you to have the book finished and polished and everything you want into it when you start sending out your query letters. You've done this enough to know that it's you'll have time to edit it while it's in the mail.
That's how email even. You know, it used to be you mailed everything. Now most things are email. It'll be 80% shiny, I would say,
right,
but the back 20%. And I've pretty much always had time to clean that up. I've never been had the email the next day saying I want the complete manuscript. You know, I've gotten emails back in 5 minutes that say I want to look at three chapters. Then it takes them 2 weeks to answer those, and sometimes then they want the whole book. But, you know, in 2 weeks, you can edit quite a bit and do some things. The interesting thing is when I landed my agent, who is no longer my agent, but that actually came off of Twitter on something I just casually mentioned, and somebody that was interning for that agent mentioned it to them, and they said, well, this was for the Lettuce is the Devil stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what actually landed me an agent. They called me and wanted to know what I was going to do with it. And next thing I know, I'd signed with an agent. Now, it turned out, and all I had at that time was 4 pages of pretty rough stuff. But I told them that, and it was kind of based on the idea. As it turned out, that wasn't a good thing because we had completely opposite visions for the book. They wanted a food book that happened to be funny, and I saw it as a funny book that happened to be about food, which I guess sounds relatively close, but man, our visions were worlds apart.
How long was that experience for you, signing with that agent and then you guys realizing it wasn't going to work out?
11 months. But 6 months of that, pretty active. The last 5 months was him mostly non-responsive to anything I sent. And then I got to where I won't even bother. And then it was only after he had already told me that the feed store book. He thought it was a regional book, so go ahead and do whatever I wanted with it. So in the meantime, I sold it. It came out. I was busy with it. Then the whole reality stuff started coming about. I finally got to thinking, heck, he's done nothing for me, you know. If all this stuff works out, why should I let him suddenly be a big part of it when he wasn't helping me? And I don't have any ill, it was just a difference in vision. I don't want to say, but I didn't want to keep him around. He wasn't doing anything for me at that point. We weren't even talking. So finally I sent him a letter, certified letter, that I thought it was time we part ways, and he pretty much agreed. And so it was an amicable deal. There was no, you know, he's a reputable, good agent. He wasn't the right guy for that.
It just wasn't right for you at the time.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's one thing. Travis, you know, you and I are both in Texas, and Texas, as Texans will point out, is neither New York nor Los Angeles. So we don't really know that many people in the publishing business when we start out. You know, we meet them on the internet, we meet them at conferences and that sort of thing. But in terms of just sending your stuff off to a publisher or an agent, when you first start out, that seems like it's that's the biggest step, doesn't it? And then once you actually start talking to them, you realize it's not the be-all, end-all, and finding the right agent and the right publisher is far more important than just finding a publisher or an agent.
Yeah.
You got to get the right fit.
Exactly, yeah. It's all about personalities like everything else. You know, you don't want to work with or for somebody you just can't stand. And even if it's you like them personally, if you don't have similar tastes, sensibilities, visions, it's just going to be a struggle for you and them. So, and I don't think they're as important as they used to, you know.
Mm-hmm. When I was talking to Joe Lansdale, he said that they're not as important because you can get published from anywhere now. You can self-publish if that's your deal. It's the field has changed over the last 10 years, especially. You know, if you're going to work with one, it's vital that it's the absolute right one.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that. I won't, you know, I guess, you know, it's kind of like dating. It's kind of like when you're a teenager and you're looking for that first girl, that first score, you know, the first one. Anybody willing, you're okay, yeah, let's do it. But, you know, after a while, you kind of refine your taste, and you got to find the right one for you. That's the one you got to settle down with. And I won't be so quick to sign with anybody again. You know, we should have really talked about vision and things about that book, and we would have realized that, but we kind of rushed into bed together, so to speak, so...
Well, luckily, you're both out safe and sound from that. So, you know, lesson learned on that one. Let me ask you about your writing, about the whole process. Let's take one of your fictional projects, for example. When you begin writing, how much of the plot do you have in your head? Do you write it down and outline it or timeline it? Or do you just keep it in your head and go one point to the next? How do you get organized in the business of writing a long form, you know, fictional project?
I never start with an outline, ever. I usually have some sense of how it's going to end. I have a good sense of at least one or two characters, you know, even before I do those sketches. And I may have an idea of what I think the beginning will be. Now, I don't think on any fiction, creative nonfiction project I've ever started, the actual beginning was what I originally thought it would be. They almost always change. I almost always think the beginning is farther back than it is. You know, basically my chapter 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 becomes where the story really starts. I find the other stuff is just backstory I can weave in here and there in bits and pieces.
Travis, I know that you mentioned you've been to workshops and, you know, the week-long writer's workshop, that's kind of where things started for you. In terms of putting everything together, what other things did you do to get yourself along the way? Did you do any writers groups? What sort of things did you do? Because I know that the workshops certainly help. The right kind of writers group can help. But what helped you take that step from wanting to be a writer to getting better, I guess I'd say?
Man, that's tough. Of course, being an avid reader all my life, that's the biggest step. I think if you're not an avid reader, you're going to have to be a hard time being a good writer. So that was the first basis. I actually took a class here at Amarillo College from a lady named Jody Thomas, who is a romance writer. She's in the RWA Hall of Fame. Up until that point, and I kind of just took that for something to do.
Mm-hmm.
Up until that time, I'd always thought, you know, I could write a book, but I thought there's no way anybody from Amarillo, Texas is going to be able to publish a book, you know. You've got to know somebody in New York, or I just didn't think it was an obtainable goal. I met this woman who lived here all of her life. At that time, she had 16 novels already out. It was a New York Times best-selling romance writer. Just meeting her gave me, you know, the idea, wait, somebody here from can do that. From Amarillo can accomplish this. And plus, she read some of my work, and, you know, she offered some encouragement, which increased my confidence. And
mm-hmm.
I started going to a few conferences here in Amarillo, and I went to one down in Dallas and Oklahoma City and competing a few contests. And I won some, placed well, and just kind of got, and then pretty soon I'm stubborn and steadfast that I can do it. And the bugs on you, and you're addicted to writing anyway, so mm-hmm. that's really how I got into the business side of it. You know, even as a kid, I would write some stuff. Me and my buddies, you know, I remember the movie Red Dawn. I don't know if you remember
how could I not know that movie? Of course, Wolverines, yes.
Yeah, well, we decided, well, what if the Russians invaded Amarillo? What would we do? So I kind of wrote this little cheesy rip-off script with us as the characters. And
so like 26 years ago, you were writing fan fiction already.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
So, I've always messed around with it and wrote stories, and I had freshman comp in college and did well, you know, and things. So it was always kind of there. I just didn't really believe it was obtainable. And
mm-hmm.
meeting her and taking the class at Amarillo College gave me the idea it was obtainable.
Last question for you here. Just talking about your influences and all that. When, you know, you may not have known it was obtainable until you met her, but at the same time, you had to have it in you, you know, for most of your life. Do you remember reading something maybe as a kid or as a teenager that really stuck with you? That, like, if you could have written anything, it would have been that?
I can tell you that Where the Red Fern Grows was the first book I ever read. The last word immediately turned to the front of the book and started rereading.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in about the third grade when I read it. And, you know, I really connected with that book. I've read it numerous times since. I've always been a big To Kill a Mockingbird fan. Mark Twain, I always loved his stuff. Of course, you know, then there was Encyclopedia Brown books I loved as a kid because I liked trying to figure out that mystery. And then those books where you used to could choose your own ending, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I remember those.
I got into those, so all of that kind of stuff. Then I hit the Louis Moore phase and read a bunch of Alfred Hitchcock for a while and just come up through the years. You know, this will sound odd, probably. It sounds kind of bad, but I'd read a thing, newspaper, magazine somewhere, about Nicholas Sparks getting this huge advance for The Notebook.
Yeah.
And I was in the bookstore one day just looking around for something else, and I happened to see this book, The Notebook. And I thought, well, I'm going to look at this. This guy, I think, I can't remember now, it was like $5 million advance or something for this book. And I started picking it up, and I started reading, and I thought, man, I could create something as good as this.
Mm-hmm.
If he makes that, you know, and that, in a way, that influenced me because I thought, man, this isn't that great. I can do this.
Yeah,
there's... So I can also count Nicholas Sparks, I guess, as an inspiration.
At some point, you know, once you make it, you will have to buy him a beer or wine or whatever he'd be into at that point, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, there is something to that. As I guess we all start as prospective writers, everybody who is an avid reader, and you have to learn what you like and what you don't like and what you think you can do better than what's already out there. You know, if everything good was already written, we wouldn't need to put anything down on paper, would we?
Yeah, good point, you know. Yep. You don't want to disparage another writer. Everything's subjective. I never will say somebody, you know, oh, that book's horrible. You know, take the Twilight books. I've never read them.
Right.
But I've heard a lot of writers just completely disparage those books and Stephanie Meyer as being a bad writer. She's just a bad writer to them.
Yeah.
She obviously gave her intended audience exactly what they wanted. So, you know, in that regard, you've got to applaud. They knew who their audience was. They gave them what they wanted. So I never will take any writer, especially a successful writer, and say, oh, they're horrible, they're bad. They're just not what I want to read.
Right. Yeah, everybody has... if you're doing something and you're getting paid for it, or if you're doing something and you're enjoying it, then it's a success, I would think. Yeah, I don't... The Twilight books are not my... They are not my cup of tea, and they probably never will be. But she's made a lot of money off of those. And that's, you know, if you want to do this as a profession, there's nothing wrong with writing something that people will actually read. I mean, you can write the Great American Novel and sell it out of the trunk of your car at the Easy Mart. You know, that maybe won't reach as many people, perhaps, as something about, you know, vampires and shirtless werewolves.
Yeah.
Hey, Travis, what's the next step for you? You've got, I know you've got the project coming up on the show that you can't talk about. I know you got that. Does that, while you're doing that, does that overrule your writing career, or can you continue writing in other fields while that whole project's going on?
Well, you know, I'm certainly eager waiting on that. I'm also working on, I'm still refining the Lettuce is the Devil stuff. I'm hoping to begin querying agents on that. I still have high hopes for it. I have a couple of fiction stories that I'll work on one for a while and go back. They're pretty complex, deep stories that mm-hmm. are tough. I have to sometimes think about the characters and things, and I've alternated back and forth between those. I'm constantly writing something. Right now I'm crazy busy writing the high school football profile, so that it's nice to get a writing check once in a while, you know.
Yeah,
the passion is the fiction stuff, but you know, those checks are few and far between, so writing like the football profiles kind of gives me a little confidence, a little affirmation that, well, you can write stuff that people are willing to pay for. So
yeah.
They're good for the soul and the checkbook at the same time. As far as a big fiction project, I still have several books I believe in. I just haven't been pitching them lately. You know, I wrote this kind of modern-day pirate story about derelict used car dealers over in Oklahoma called Plundered Booty. I still very much believe in that book.
Mm-hmm.
I have a women's fiction book called A River Without Water that I believe in still, that I may actually end up self-publishing that book. I've shopped it around pretty heavy and had some people really interested, had a New York editor that wanted to buy it, but the marketing team kiboshed it, so, because they thought it didn't have enough marketing punch. But I've won a couple of contests with it. I have enough reason to believe it has merit. I've just haven't had the outlet to get it to readers, so
mm-hmm.
I may dip my toes into the self-publishing waters for the first time with it. But all of that, I'm kind of waiting, because if I get on the reality show and things work out there, it would probably help me place a book like that a lot easier. So.
Oh yeah, that would really help your Help your Facebook and Twitter numbers, definitely. Being on a show like that. All right, Travis, last question for you. I'm going to put you on the spot here. For someone who's listening to this, what's the one piece of advice to a prospective writer, to a guy who's trying to start out? What's the one piece of advice that, through your experience, through everything that you've learned and learned from other people and learned from, you know, doing it wrong the first time yourself, what's the one thing that you could tell them?
Oh, the one thing that seemed really obvious is just write. You know, it's easy to get caught up in the, well, is this the right project I'm writing? You know, is the market doing this? Or should I go back and edit this? I really wouldn't advise people to write the way I do, to keep going back, because I've met too many fellow writers who start lots of projects and never finish. So especially for a brand new person, I think the first thing you can do is write regularly. If it's not every day, at least, you know, every other day, on the weekends, whatever your schedule allows, make yourself write on a regular basis and finish the project. Don't abandon, even if you know it's horrible halfway through and it'll never sell, finish, so that you then know at least you can finish a book. Because I've met some talented writers that just cannot finish anything they start. Write often and finish that first project. That's what I tell any brand new writer.
That is Travis Irwin. His book, The Feed Store Chronicles, is available now. It was a number one in Canada, as he pointed out to us. I've got the links up on the website too. You guys can flip through it online. You can purchase it until Travis sent you. Travis Irwin with the Feed Store Chronicles and that other secret project. He can't really talk about that much. So thanks for tuning us in. Thanks very much for Travis for giving us a couple of minutes. Always good to talk to a friend and another writer. More coming up soon back here on readaboutit.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Reed Kerr.